everybody. Welcome to another PR Masters podcast, and this is number 83 in our four-year-long series. I'm Mark Stevens, your host, and I am pleased to tell you that today's guest is an old friend of mine and a leader in the world of public relations. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Phil Nardone. And Phil founded Pan Communications over 25 years ago and has since overseen the firm to five offices internationally, with a growing virtual community as well. And most recently, Phil has led Pan through two acquisitions, both of which has kept his number one vision in mind, to create a firm with shared values, exceptional work ethic, and wonderful quality of life for his employees. Phil's depth of experience has led him to several major industry recognitions, including PR News, 50 Game Changers of PR, PR News, PR Trainer Educator of the Year, and for his work as an adjunct professor at his alma mater, Syracuse University. He's received awards from them, and he's also involved in the PR Club's John. He'll explain what that is. Molloy Crystal Bell Lifetime Achievement Award. Most recently, Phil was inducted into PR Daily's Hall of Fame in their 2020 Communicator of the Year Awards. And Phil, by the way, is an active member of the PR community, very much so, including the PR Council Board of Directors, Syracuse University's Newhouse School of Communications Board of Directors, and the Newhouse DEI Committee, which is focused around bringing diversity and inclusion to the industry. Well, that's quite a background. Phil, how are you today? Welcome to PR Masters.
Great. Good to be here. Can't believe it's number 83. I'm honored to have been selected and looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, it's great to have you with us. It really is. I've wanted to do this with you for a while. One of the questions I always lead off with, Phil, by the way, is because so many people have gotten into public relations in mysterious ways and roundabout ways and unintended ways. So yeah. I wanted to ask you initially, how did you get into public relations? Was it something that you had dreamed of doing ever since you were a child? You know, I either want to be a fireman or I want to be in public relations.
Yeah.
Or did you get into it by accident, as many people have?
No, mine was more intent than that. I had attended Villanova University and heard a gentleman speak by the name of Peter Osgood. I think you and I remember him, Art. And he ran an agency by the name of Newsom & Company around the time that you were running your firm. Yep. You sold to Publicis. He sold to Carl Byer & Associates and then went on to sell to Hill & Knowlton. He told me that he had gone to Syracuse University, the Newhouse School, and that if I was serious about the field of public relations, I should consider transferring there. I did, and that began my passion for public relations. In 1982, when I graduated, there were no jobs in public relations, so I took a job as a receptionist in Peter Osgood's firm called Newsom & Company. Mm-hmm. And you can only imagine the first boy in a family of five to attend university, to graduate and tell your family that you were going to be a receptionist. At the time, receptionists were typically jobs for people that were, you know, coming back to the workforce later in life and things like that. But I did it proudly and I loved it. I worked my way up, as you know, 8 years later, to be the youngest VP and general manager in the Hill & Knowlton network. So that was under Bob Dillon-Schneider's reign and Jack Bergen at the time. So for me, climbing the ranks from receptionist through to VP and GM started my career. I always knew I wanted to have my own agency. I loved the camaraderie that you see in an agency, the level of collaboration, the friendship and networks that are formed. That's how I got into it, and my heart has always been in agency PR.
Well, that's great, you know, because you really are one of the few that we have interviewed on this four-year-old PR Masters podcast series that have actually intended to get into public relations. You know, I got into it by accident, but I won't get into that because this is about you.
Well, that's
this is
okay,
about you,
but
not
remind
me.
How did you get into it by accident, Art?
I was a textbook editor at Prentice Hall. That was my first job. Prentice Hall was a leading American stock exchange company at the time. And I was a textbook editor, and I was getting tired of proofreading, you know, and copy editing, although those skills have served me well over the years. And a friend of mine was in personnel, and I told him that I was getting bored and I was going to leave. And he said, well, there's an opening in the corporate public relations department. And I said, what's public relations? You know, but I took the job, and that's how I got into it.
Yeah, good for you.
I've been doing it ever since. Never left it.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Phil, your agency has really been one of the hottest tickets in town, and your revenues have increased. You've done acquisitions. You handle any number of blue-chip clients, and the quality of life, you know, within your agency is renowned. How did you do it?
I think that for me it's been about listening and learning as I've gone on this journey. When I created PAN in 1995, we were simply an earned media shop. And as our industry evolved, I evolved, and I continued to explore new avenues to make PAN a better firm. I think we'll talk about this later, but there are many types of CEOs out there, Art, and I clearly am a CEO that is passionate about people and culture. And I think because the employees at PAN know that about me, they expect me to listen and lead with transparency, and I do that. So I've been able to attract really good talent by motivating them and listening to their ideas and trying some of their ideas. But as an individual, I've allowed myself to learn and grow and try things. So today, PAN is very much an integrated marketing and public relations firm where our clients come to us because we are good storytellers and we look at that multi-channel. We don't just look at the earned component. We're comfortable with paid and all of the other aspects. We look at digital media continually in every account relationship we have. I would say that has really changed the way PAN is viewed. And then I would tell you on the people side, just continuing to evolve, whether it be post-COVID, going from 5 brick-and-mortar offices to many shared office spaces across the U.S. and embracing more of a virtual component, which I know we can get into later. But those are the main things that I think have kept me and the agency top of mind. And a little bit of what you said, Art, in your very nice introduction, I have always been passionate and committed to making sure that PAN is a work environment where people can bring their whole selves. From the very beginning, when work-life balance was not necessarily a good topic, I leaned into it and I embraced welcoming people that wanted to bring their personal life in, meaning that we all have personal lives and we can't just keep them external. They do find their way into the workforce. And I have always felt like to bring your whole self, your true self, into a work environment. And if there's something going on in your personal life, we have to understand that. And so that has always been true to who I am. And I think it's made PAN a top employer of choice. And I'm very proud of those awards that we've won where we've been recognized as a best place to work. And I think it's because of that cultural belief.
You know, Phil, you are a rare breed, and I mean it in the most positive way, because you and I have seen many, you know, agencies during the years where the CEO and founder stays kind of at the same level. They manage their agency, but they don't have that much of a vision as to the future. You obviously are not only a PR professional, but you are an entrepreneur. You had a vision, you know, so you go well beyond just, you know, running, you know, a PR agency on a day-to-day basis. You have made acquisitions. You have done integration. You have obviously forged well ahead of many PR agency owners. Tell me about that, you know, your entrepreneurial spirit, in addition to obviously your basic public relations capability.
Yeah, I love that, Art. Thank you for acknowledging it and raising the question. I think it's just been true to who I am. I can't separate Phil Nardone, the individual, from Phil Nardone, the CEO of a firm. I went on my own life journey, as you may recall. I've spoken about it at various PRSA conferences and the like. But going from a marriage and putting myself on a journey to find my true identity as a gay man, I think has opened up my heart very much, where I lead this organization with kindness and empathy and an understanding that I don't think many people have. And when you talk about that level of leadership, I say proudly, yes, I step into that, and I put myself in the shoes of every individual at PAN. We're 200 proud, and I understand that each of them are navigating life and are on their own journey. So I think for me, what's helped is to not compartmentalize those things, but as an entrepreneur, to treat people with kindness and empathy and listen to their ideas and welcome that. And it's allowed me to create an organization that I think we're so much stronger, so much better because of that. Along the way, I've leaned into growth in a way that I think has only made PAN stronger. We can grow by building, we can grow by buying. And as you know, we've made two acquisitions, one in 2015, one in 2019, and probably we will be making another in 2024. We have a letter of intent out right now for another agency that we would tuck in and under PAN, and I'm very proud of that. So you are right. I continue to test my own boundaries. I continue to test our industry. I continue to challenge people. We're going to talk a lot about my CEO cohort. These are CEOs of other PR and IM firms that we value a safe zone of a conversation, and I think it's made me a better leader. It's made me a better entrepreneur. I learn from them all the time. So I think my first response to what's made me a success in terms of entrepreneurship has been my own journey of finding honesty and integrity. And by doing that, I've inspired others to just feel good about who they are and embrace their whole self. And I think that that has helped make PAN the better firm that it is today.
Oh, that's brilliant. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Given the growth of your agency, Phil, how has your role changed in any way? You know, I mean, obviously as an entrepreneur, as a visionary, but why don't you describe to us, you know, the management?
I don't think you can talk to a CEO that in today's world where their role hasn't evolved and changed. For me, it's very seldom that I will get involved in the world of client relations. We are fortunate enough to have a terrific chief client relations officer in Darlene Doyle. So, yes, she's one of my direct reports, but she handles everything that there is with that world. We have Mark Nardone, who I think you've met before, my brother, that's our CMO that handles all of new business and marketing. So I oversee that just by having him as a direct report, but he's a 20-plus year veteran and knows exactly what he's doing. Same thing for my chief HR officer, the people and culture. She cares more about my people than I do, and that's really hard to say, or, you know, that's a real compliment to Elizabeth. And Gary, the chief financial officer at PAN, knows his world, and my last but not least member of my C-suite is Meg Kessler, that looks at our service offering and growing our existing clients. So for me, just walking you through those five tremendous leaders, it tells you that I've popped my level, my role up a little bit, where I can look at M&A and I can look at industry-wide activities. We're going to talk a little bit later about DEI and teaching at HBCUs and teaching at Syracuse and speaking at conferences and caring about our industry, Art. So as much as Pan comes first professionally to me, because these individuals are running their swim lane so effectively and efficiently, I'm able to do other things and look broadly. And what I am, what you're making me think about in this question is, I do bring back to them very often a perspective of what I hear from either other CEOs or just along life's journey for me. Even in the world of M&A, I'm talking to firms that are 8 million and under, and I will tell you I learn from them. So I take back some things to the Pan team all the time. And I think that that is how my role has changed. And I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that I think I inspire my C-suite by being so connected to other leaders and having my ear to the ground and caring as much about the industry as I do, that I think it makes them feel really good about the role, and I don't micromanage them. And you and I know so many CEOs of firms. I counsel friends all the time that you're stuck at this 6 million or 10 million or whatever chasm they're trying to cross in there. If you look in the mirror, the reason why many people can't cross that chasm is they need to micromanage and know everything about every aspect of their business. So hiring really good people has allowed me to step away from that day-to-day level. I'm still very much a CEO that gets involved and is visible with my people, and we can talk about that later, but that's the main way that I think I've changed and evolved in my role.
Well, the fact that you have changed your role has enabled you and allowed you to not only, you know, alter the initial direction of your agency, but to help shape the role that PR agencies are now playing in our business and social environment. You know, you are a pioneer in so many ways by obviously altering and modifying what people originally saw as the role of a public relations agency. I'd like you to get into that a little bit because, you know, in that sense, you are truly a PR master.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I think where we're going with this question, Art, is my passion and commitment for diversity, equity, and inclusion. When Pan created a Pan ID committee, it was before the murders of George Floyd or Breonna Taylor. We felt that we needed to have a committee at Pan that looked at and cared about any type of diverse audience, whether it be BIPOC, LGBTQ, and anything. So for us, when the Black Lives Matter movement happened, we were already talking as an internal organization, a group of practitioners, about being more fair and equitable and learning about Juneteenth or anything that other communities are passionate about that I didn't know as a white dude CEO. I knew what I knew, right? We all did. But to open up and learn about that was really important. Around that same time, I had been teaching at Syracuse University for probably 15 years, one course every spring semester. I had been asked to teach at one of the HBCUs, North Carolina Central University. And what was interesting about it, Art, is someone had heard me speak and had a student that had attended one of the online courses that I spoke at the Newhouse School and brought it back to their dean, and their dean reached out to me. So now I put together and have been for probably 5 years a four-part guest lecture series at four different HBCUs where I talk about our industry and try and help people of color to see a path to join our industry. Many CEOs at the time of the Black Lives Matter movement after the killing of George Floyd and others leaned into DEI. I think that sadly that's waned somewhat in our industry. And maybe it's because of the economy and other things have become more important to these CEOs. But to me, I have continued to put together a four-part guest lecture series because I want our industry, our industry needs to be more diverse, and I want more people of color in our industry. And I want us to be able to listen and learn from diverse voices and allow them a place where they can feel good. So many of the students that I touch every fall semester at these HBCUs don't think that PR is the right field for them, and they have a multitude of reasons why. So I bring them a series of guests, some that are PAN employees that can talk to them about what it was like to transition from an HBCU to an agency like PAN and why it fits and feels right. And I think what they start to see is that they too can make a go of this industry. And I hope that I'm touching people and that's evolving and that it's continuing to bring more people of color into our industry.
That's very, very laudable. Phil, given that, as obviously one of the goals of you personally, as well as the agency itself, give me a sense of where you see your agency heading in the next, say, 5 years. We'll start with five. I could have said 10, but we'll start with five. Do you want to reach a certain size? Do you want to get into other areas?
I do. Today, PAN sits at proudly in the mid 30 million range. And as I mentioned earlier in our podcast, we're looking to make another acquisition. So, yes, I do want to continue to grow as a strong mid-size independent brand. I continue to want to evolve with the service offering that we have at PAN, and I want us to be as sticky and as important as we can be with our clients. I mentioned Meg earlier, Kessler, in a member of our C-suite. She looks at all service offerings, and this year she's launching what we're calling Pantelligence. So it's our next generation analytics platform that analyzes all that B2B audience and connects marketers with revenue impact and things like that. I feel like that's what CMOs are looking for, Art, and that's a good example of how PAN stays relevant and is evolving. But what's even more about that, when you talk to me as a CEO, I'm not the dude that's making it all happen. I'm listening to Meg, listening to her team, and embracing what they are saying they are capable of doing in order for us to have that service offering. Listen, I was very passionate with Meg that we needed to have more of an analytics platform, and that's as much as I needed to say, and Meg ran with it and created Pantelligence. So things like that are what continue to inspire me and what I continue to see for the next 3 years happening at PAN, that we are continuing to evolve with the market and grow. Will this acquisition be my last? You know, I don't know. I love what I do. I think if you were to talk to any of the employees that attend my every other month all staff meetings, they would say Phil doesn't act like a guy in his mid-60s. He keeps us on our toes. So I love what I do, Art, and I want to continue to do it.
That leads into one of the questions I was going to ask you about your style of management. Obviously, it's undoubtedly evolved over the years, you know, and you don't get into every crevice, you know, in the agency, but you have very reliable people, you know, to work with you. Did that come about by accident, or was this, was this a planned management decision you made at a certain point?
That's awesome. It did happen at a certain point. PAN was at the $6 million range for, I'm going to tell you, 6 years, Art. We could not get out of that we plateaued there, and we were doing great work. And if there's any of my former employees that are listening to this, they'll remember those years we would go to our offsite strategy session and beat each other up as to why we posted another year at 6 million. So I think it took the realization that I needed to change in order for the agency to change. And at that point, I assigned people swim lanes that today I look at and say it was the best move I ever did. So for CEOs of smaller agencies that are listening to this, by eliminating the high degree of repeating conversations with every leader and making sure rather that people had a specific swim lane that they owned and truly empowering them to own that, Pan started to fly. And this was pre the Vantage acquisition that you were a part of in 2015. It was really just looking internally at Pan and saying, I don't want all of my leadership team to be a little bit in HR, a little bit in client relations, a little bit in new business, a little bit in organic growth, but rather to assign people an area, one of those levers that matter, and empowering them. So it was with purpose that I did that management change, and that meant that these people reporting to me, we would challenge each other and look for more and more success. And that's what happened. We saw great success by having people own an area of the business. And it's still true today. That doesn't mean that we don't come together every Monday at 1 o'clock for our C-suite meetings where we work on the business rather than in the business. It's a very healthy 1.5 hour or 2 hour meeting. But it took a lot of my just internal reflection on my style that I was so inclusive, Art, and I still am, but I was so inclusive, I felt like this person needed to know what that person was doing, and it didn't allow them to have time in their day to really see some good growth and result of their work. And so I would say it was with intent, and it's still to this day helped Pan grow year on year.
Yeah. So at a certain point, after going through a number of years at not able to get beyond the 6 million mark, you know, obviously with the vision you began to create, what was the turning point? Did you start getting new and better accounts, and one year you went from 6 million, say, to, I don't know, 7 million? What was the breakthrough point?
The breakthrough point was where I saw people just focus in business development and go after blue chip clients. And I would say that winning back then, I don't know, I'd be making it up if I said what the account budget was, but all of a sudden winning larger budget accounts while someone was looking at client relations and retaining those clients. And I would say that started to be the moment of truth. And we did go from 6 million to 8.5, and then 8.5 to 10. And we kept climbing ever since.
Wow.
But you are right. It was at those pivotal moments where I said, this is working because we're allowing people to focus in one area. Rather, the way we were doing it, you went in one business and then you had to work on the business while you were still keeping a leg in the next opportunity of new business. Now we were conquering and dividing as a leadership team.
Wow, that's really quite a success story, and obviously lessons to be learned by agency CEOs who are listening to the podcast today. What further advice would you give to CEOs and founders of agencies that have also hit a barrier? Any additional advice you might give them in terms of how to get out of that rut?
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot. So on the barrier question, my response is what you and I just talked about. Look at your leadership team and embrace and welcome experts in a certain area. Beyond that, I would say do not be afraid to embrace a high-flex environment. At Pan, we went, as you know, from 100% in an office to now people are able to work wherever they would like at Pan. Certainly, we have offices scattered throughout the U.S. and in London, and that is great for those individuals that want to go to an office. But for the most part, people are very effective working from home. And there are many CEOs of firms that I talk with that say, no, I want them to come to an office 2 days a week, 3 days a week, or whatever it is. And if that works for you and your brand and you believe in that, then great. But for me, I see the benefit of people at Pan that feel very good about Pan being an environment that is saying HyFlex is here to stay. We are not going to ever ask you to come into an office a certain number of days. And I think that it takes the monkey off of everyone's back. They see that many agencies had started that way, Art, and today many of them are saying because we want more collaboration or because of sluggish results, we want people to be in the office 2 to 3 days a week. And what it's done for me is it's allowed us to continue to meet and hire the most talented people in the business that are saying, I picked up and moved to New Hampshire, to Nashville, to Denver, and I don't want to have to go into an office. I work effectively and efficiently from home. And at Pan, we embrace that. So being receptive to things like that and staying consistent with it are really key levers for me. I think that many PR practitioners come out of the gate strong, Art, and then they revert back to where they're comfortable and where they are, you know, just have a sense of this feels right. So for me, it might have felt a little clunky at the beginning, having everybody working remotely and some people, you know, tuning out in the middle of the day for some personal reason and then coming back in after dinner. But the work was getting done well, and I've not looked back. And I think for me, that level of consistent managing, consistent leading has helped a lot. People know what they're going to get at Pan.
Philip, you've helped shape the role of the public relations agency in contemporary life with what you've done and the additional services you have begun to provide clients, the role in which your employees fit within the organization. Where do you think public relations is today, and what's your view of its role going forward?
I love your question. This spring is my 23rd year teaching at the Newhouse School. I teach a course on PR management and leadership, and the university flies me in every Monday. I teach Tuesday morning, and I leave Tuesday afternoon. I've seen over the last 20-something years, Art, people in my class, they're seniors in a very accomplished, highly regarded communication school. I've seen students over the years that have been turned off by the industry, and yet in this group that I have this year, out of 16 students in my class, every one of them is looking to stay in the industry. That has not happened for a while, my friend. I would have students in my class that were disillusioned by the industry, that were angry at the industry and did not want a career there after spending 4 years earning a public relations degree, but rather were going into teaching or wanting to go to a master's for another industry because they were disillusioned by PR. I think today people see public relations as more than earned media, more than dialing for dollars for media coverage, but rather being able to consult and advise on the whole storytelling of a brand and what that brand needs to do to be to resonate with their constituencies. And so I think people are more excited about the industry and feel that the level of respect that this industry has earned has been achieved. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that, thankfully, compensation has continued to increase for entry-level employees in PR. These students that over the years were disillusioned by PR, I think were disappointed and just clearly unhappy that starting salaries were lower than what their colleagues in a business degree might be getting or an engineering degree might be getting. So we've continued to see those compensations increase, and I'm proudly at Pan, we pay people at the entry level and really very competitively. So I think that that's helping people feel good about our industry. And to me, I've never seen people be, you know, certainly every now and then you'll get someone in our industry that wants to take a turn and redirect their career. But for the most part, I found that once they get into the industry and get the taste of what it's like, they stay and they love it. So I have seen over the years that go up, down, and all over the place. And right now, spring 2024, you're hitting me at a time where I have 16 out of 16 students excited about going into the public relations field, and their main reason is because they're compensated and they see that they can do more than earned media. They're excited about digital, they're excited about paid, they're excited about social. So the full scope of things.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Given all that you've done, you know, for your agency and obviously for the profession itself, what about your personal quality of life? Do you practice what you preach?
Absolutely. So I just hired a new EA that's starting March 18th. And she said, we were texting each other, and she had some doctor's appointments that she wanted to make. And she said, I remember during the interview that you said you play tennis in the morning or go to the gym and don't usually take a first meeting until 10. And I said, you're spot on. So, you know, and we all have personal lives. They come first, and so does health and well-being. So I work out every morning, and I don't start my day typically until 9:30 or 10 because I'm playing tennis or I'm on the Peloton. But I want work-life balance, Art, and I want to lead by example. I want people to see that I have a loving husband who is important in my life. I have two sons, both that are married, that I talk about and I share photos, and I welcome people doing the same, that there is no separation of work life. When you work at Pan, I want to know that you're helping your grandmother do XYZ, or that you just got a new puppy and you know what your struggle is to house train them or anything like that. But I practice what I preach, and I lead by example. So when I think about the conversations that my CEO cohort and I have had around mental health, I think it starts with showing your team that you yourself are taking care of your mental health and that it's important to you. So I think by leading by example, I show people at Pan that they need to take care of them.
Phil, I've got a couple more questions for you, and I appreciate your input. You know, you are right. You are spot on in terms of the advice you're giving agency owners and your take on the industry. But I've got a couple more questions.
Sure.
One is, who are your heroes and mentors? And I'll put that in another way, too. Who has had the most influence in your life and career?
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say that Because of the type of person that I am, I have my heroes and mentors are those CEOs of other PR and IM firms. My CEO cohort is very important to me. I learn from them. I listen to them. We share in a safe zone, counsel each other, and I take advice. So it could be Barbie Siegel at Zeno or Mike Doyle at Ketchum or Heather Kiernahan at Hotwire or Dale Bornstein at M Booth, all people that you know, Diana at MSL. I mean, my group of CEOs that I respect and admire are my heroes. They are doing what I'm doing, and in many ways they do it better, and they teach me, and I listen to them. I'd like to think that I share valuable insights with them as well. But for me, I think it's when I pause and think about heroes and mentors, it's not one person that I watched and followed. Maybe in those early years, like I said at the beginning, Art, I heard Peter Osgood speak, and I desperately wanted to be him and work at his firm. And when he offered me an receptionist position, I jumped at it, and I was very proud to be a receptionist. And I still would be today. I mean, I learned valuable skills, but heroes and mentors to me are those CEOs that are running these firms and in many ways doing a bang up job and a better job than I am. So I am in awe of the way they lead. One of the CEOs that I mentioned, and I, during those COVID days, get a daily email to our staffs, and our group of CEOs said, there's no way, Phil and Barbie, that you're going to continue to do this. And we did, and we shared those emails with each other, and we catch a lot of crap now from our colleagues that we lead with heart. And but you know, in my virtual world of PAN, I want to be visible. So I embrace that I can send out a communication and get flooded with emails back from my staff that I hit on a point that matters to them. I know that I can't be everywhere and be everything to everyone. So this past year in our organization, we identified 5 people in the United States and 1 in the UK to be a regional lead to carry Phil's culture and passion for people and connection with people in that market of the US or in the UK. And it's worked beautifully, Art. So we get together, they pick my brain on what's important, and then they're able to cascade that concept, that feeling to people in their region by pulling them together for an activity or a call or anything like that. So I continue to learn as I go. I continue to try new things, but I'm still learning from CEOs and founders of agencies. They do remarkable work in our industry, Art, and what you do every day to try and help them fulfill a fiduciary, a fiscal goal is amazing because they work hard. This is not easy work.
Yeah. You know, Phil, one of the reasons I enjoy doing the PR Masters podcast series is because I also continue to learn from the brilliant minds, you know, who take part in our series. And my God, Phil, I've learned a lot from you today. You have been amazing. And I've got one final question for you, okay? One final question.
Okay.
How do you want to be remembered? How do you want to be remembered?
Well, to know me would be that even right now, I get emotional thinking about that because it's who I am. So I would say I would want to be remembered as someone that led by example and always kept heart, kindness, and empathy top of mind with everything he did.
Wow. All right. Well, Phil Nardone, on that note, on behalf of the PR Masters podcast listeners, I really, really thank you for joining us today. You've really given us a great deal to think about. And quite frankly, seeing the progress your firm has made for the last number of years, I have been one of your biggest fans. And I think hopefully through the podcast that people will get to know more about you and how you have managed to create a truly unique and most relevant agency. So congratulations to you on your success. And thank you so much for joining us, Bill.
Yeah. Back at you, Art, because you've been in this industry for a long time and you've seen a lot of changes. You've continued to evolve, and I have the utmost respect for you, and I admire what you've built and what you've done. So take a bow yourself, sir.
Phil, thanks an awful lot. Thanks a lot. And that's it for today, folks. That's our PR Masters podcast with Phil Nardoni. I thank you all for joining us, and I'd like to thank Faye Shapiro, who is the publisher and editor-in-chief of Compro, for her support and sponsorship of these podcasts, which are now in their fourth year. So this is Art Stevens saying until next time, I'm signing off now, and be well.
Cheers.